And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the 9 to noon show here on Highland Radio. It is Thursday. It's the 19th of December. This day next week, it'll all be over. Or not, maybe. The pot will just be starting. Anyway, we'll focus on today and we've got a busy show for you. Thank you so much for your company. Stay with us over the next 3 hours. Sinead Black is out and about again today. We are coming live from the Archview Nursing Home in Letterkenny. That's coming up after 10. Looking forward to that. We're going to try and reaffirm the road safety message in this first hour. The one thing I would love for Christmas, if I could have anything, is that all of us and everyone listening to this show and all our loved ones were all here with us at the start of the new year. And unfortunately, the roads take lives. And we're going to just try and maybe get that message home today that, you know, we can all make it through Christmas, New Year and have great fun and be safe and be with our families for 2025. That and so much more besides. We want you involved in the conversation. Of course, it is Christmas, so maybe there's good news stories that you want to pass on to us, acts of kindness. Maybe you want us to give someone a Highland high five for something they've done for you. Maybe it's the time you want to send love to someone or whatever it may be. It's up to you. It's your show. 086 60 25000. That's the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25000. Or give us a call on 07491 25000. We're taking your emails, of course, as we always do, comments at highlandradio.com. And just a reminder for you, if you're listening to the podcast, which is available on our website every day from 12:30, or indeed, if you listen to us overnight for the repeat, you can always email and be part of the show. We'll pick up your emails and include them in the next live show. And if you want to watch the programme, particularly, I suppose, our feature from Archview Lodge, you can go on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, and if you're at home, watch it on your smart TV or your Fire Stick. We're across Facebook and, of course, on the X platform. So let's run through the newspapers today. You heard it in the news there. It's the top story or the top of the page on the Tyrconnell Tribune. Councillor Jimmy Kavanagh of Fine Gael has been nominated by the constituency executive in Donegal to contest the Shannon elections in early February. And if successful, he'll be asking or seeking a nomination on either the admin or Labour panels. However, earlier in the week, party sources were reluctant to offer a view about the chances of the Donegal nomination getting the go-ahead from the selection committee in Dublin. Kavanagh was joined in seeking the Donegal nomination by John McNulty, John Curran, Johnny McGuinness, Charles Gallagher. In a vote, the constituency executive opted for Councillor Kavanagh. The exact details have not been confirmed. So we'll get much more of this speculation as we head into the new year. And a little birdie told me that Micheál Nochtin, who perhaps might feel a little aggrieved that he wasn't added to the Fianna Fáil ticket for the general election, maybe in the running for Shannon nomination from Fianna Fáil. So there's an awful lot to find out over the course of the next few weeks in relation to that. What's the future of Senator Nikki Bradley, if indeed she's seeking to return to the Shannon? I'm not quite sure. We also have Senator Eileen Flynn as well. Don't know for sure what her future holds for her. But we shall see. That will all come to that will come to our knowledge early next year. The Derry People, Donegal News this morning. Concerns have emerged that the new state-of-the-art Little Angels School in Letterkenny will not have enough classrooms to meet demand when it opens within weeks. Works on the school are due to be completed at the end of the month by Boyle Construction ahead of an expected move-in date of early February. A contract was signed in July 21 between the patron board of the school and the HSE for a site. The new school has been built on land between the Donegal Hospice and the Business Park Road, close to the current school building, and is set to provide a more modern and spacious facility for students, though the headline reads there are capacity concerns emerging there. Wasn't aware of that. If that's something you have a view on or any information on, let us know. The Derry News this morning, Brown family to hold a Bunkrana protest. The family of a young Derry woman who died after being hit by a Garda patrol car are holding a civic protest to demand answers, accountability and justice regarding her death. Rebecca Brown from the Gallia area of the city died in May 23 in Bunkrana in Inishowen when she was struck by a Garda vehicle. The collision was referred to the Garda Síochána Ombudsman's Commission, which announced last week the Director of Public Prosecutions had confirmed it not to direct a prosecution in the case. As a result of the DPP's decision, the Justice for Rebecca Brown campaign has been established to share information and get justice for, and I quote, our beautiful Rebecca Brown. On to the Nationals now, and a little bit of history was made yesterday as independent Wexford TD Verona Murphy made Doll history in the as the first female camcorder elected on the third count against three other contenders, Sinn Féin's Angus O'Shnady, outgoing camcorder Sean O'Farrell and John McGuinness, both of Fianna Fáil. Miss Murphy pledged to be a reforming chair of the Doll and to be fair and impartial. She would work to improve her Irish to a level that is commensurate with the office I now hold. What do you think about that? Do you think having enough Irish should be a prerequisite for being the camcorder? Or do you think that actually it's quite, because we see with former Deputy Joe McHugh, of course, he was given a portfolio and became a fluent Irish speaker. Maybe that's a good sign, you know, you can be what you see. So do you think that you should be excluded from being a camcorder if your Irish isn't up to scratch? Or do you think it's a positive thing that someone can be elevated to that position and promise to catch up on their Irish? I don't know what you think or whether you care. Her success after Taoiseach Simon Harris and Tánaiste Micheál Martin recommended their party support her solidifies the prospect of a Fianna Fáil Fine Gael government supported by her colleagues in the regional group of independents. The speculation as to the who will get the cabinet seats as well, that's all to be determined. But obviously, you know, Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael will have particular arguments for certain portfolios and so on and so forth. But a major shake-up of government departments is on the cards and could result in Jennifer Carroll McNeill becoming the new health minister. Independent TDs are pushing for the Department of Rural Affairs to be elevated to a full cabinet position, and I think a lot of people in this part of the world would be glad to see that. They're also seeking a second cabinet position by way of a super junior minister, as well as two junior ministers' posts. Outgoing Minister Eamon Rhines, former roles at the Department of Transport as well as Environment, Climate and Communication are to be separated, and that does make sense because I think certainly in terms of Department of Transport, and I'm thinking of Dublin Airport and then the Department of the Environment, there is a confliction there within the department, is there not, or it feels like there would be, just to give those examples. The Department of Justice will have a new Domestic Affairs Department pushed heavily by Fianna Fáil that will oversee immigration. Taoiseach Simon Harris is expected to take on the Foreign Affairs portfolio as Tánaiste, and there's more speculation about who could go where. I don't see any reference, incidentally, to outgoing Minister Charlie McConnell-Logue, whether he's being tipped to retain the health portfolio or if he's to move to another portfolio or to get no portfolio at all. He's not mentioned in this article. Another minister of interest to people in Donegal is Dara O'Brien. He's been spoken as a candidate for Justice Minister. So it'll be interesting to see who gets the housing ministry. It could be very interesting, actually, to see who gets the housing ministry. On to the Irish Daily Mail now. And cases of influenza and other respiratory diseases are set to spike between Christmas and New Year, putting significant pressure on hospitals, the HSE has warned. Yesterday, the HSE warned it's preparing for further significant increases in influenza and respiratory illnesses in the coming days and weeks. HSE Chief Bernard Gloucester said, we expect the week of Christmas and New Year to see flu cases to be at their highest so far this season, and modelling shows hospitalisations from flu alone to be in the region of €600 to €900. This is the traditional flu season, and flu's a nasty, nasty illness, particularly if you are vulnerable, and always puts great pressure on our hospitals. People can expect, they say, to see all access points to healthcare under pressure over the next few weeks, he added. In mid-December, cases of RSV, a common cause of coughs and colds, and influenza doubled in the space of a week. And we're mixing more now, of course, because it's Christmas, maybe more people out, Christmas parties and all that crack. The Farmers Journal's top story is about vets. Veterinary Ireland has secured a multi-million euro funding boost for vets in return for the rollout of the new National Veterinary Prescription System on the 13th of January. The new online system will see vets having to issue prescriptions to farmers for all prescription medicine usage by email or texts. The proposed finance package sent to Veterinary Ireland members in recent days outlines a new €40 fee paid to the vet for each TB herd test they conduct on behalf of the state. The fee will be paid by the Department of Agriculture for veterinary advice provided about TB risk in the farmers' herd, and on it goes. There's more to it than that. On to the Irish Daily Mirror today, and two men remanded in custody yesterday after appearing in court charged with murdering a mother of two. Karen Cunningham, 40, was found unconscious in a house in Banbridge, County Down on Saturday evening and died a short time later. Police have said the children's nurse suffered a head injury. Glenn Robert King, 32, of no fixed address in Lurgan, and Kevin Paul McGuigan, 42, from Anna Cloy Park in Hillsborough, County Down, appeared before Newry Magistrates Court via video link, charged with her murder. And just this morning, learning of the death of another woman in this country. And this time it's a lady in her 30s. Gardaí and Gorry are investigating the death of a woman in her 30s following an incident in the early hours of this morning. Shortly after 3 a.m, Gardaí and emergency services responded to an incident at a residence in Ballia, Owen Gorry, where the woman was found unresponsive. She was pronounced deceased at the scene. A man in his 30s has been arrested in connection with the incident and is currently being detained. It's just, it's almost every day, it seems, that we're hearing of another tragic case. On to the Irish Daily Star this morning, and potentially good news if you're into this type of thing, because Ireland is to get a new government jet, and it's only going to cost €50 million. Thomas de Mijo Martin confirmed this yesterday. The French-made 14-seater Dassault Falcon 6X is costing the taxpayer €53 million, excluding VAT, and should be delivered to the Air Corps by this time next year. That means it will be in use to ferry ministers and VIPs around when Ireland assumes the EU presidency for the second half of 2026. Mr. Martin, who is Minister for Defence as well as Foreign Affairs, announced the contract had been awarded to French manufacturer Dassault yesterday evening. €53 million plus VAT for a brand new spanking jet. And it only is 14 seats. So it's like, what, 10 grand, 12 grand a seat? I don't know, maybe we need one. Maybe we need one, or maybe there's already tons of airplanes in the sky that can fly people around. I don't know, it's up to you. And the Irish Sun this morning, Derry Girls star Siobhan McSweeney will host The Traitors Ireland. Many of you are big fans of The Traitors. I've never watched it, and also I still have to get round to watching Derry Girls, so I'm not overly familiar with Siobhan McSweeney. But I did check some threads where it seems Traitors fans are delighted with this news, that she seems to be a really good match for it, for the show. She's a Cork actress, of course, who plays Sister Michael in the comedy. She'll be Ireland's version of Claudia Wilkenman without the fringe. The paper says that the worldwide audience for Derry Girls helped her land the Plum RTE One gig. An industry source told the Irish Sun, the producers of Traitors Ireland are desperate that this version will be a hit on streaming services like Australian Traitors. And what happens is, as you see, Traitors is such a popular show. There's such a wanton audience for it around the world that it gets picked up in different countries. And you have someone who has a face that's not only recognised in Ireland, but also across the world as well. Okie doke, just to remind you, looking forward to going to Archview Lodge Nursing Home a little later on. Sinead and the team are going to be there. You can listen to that. It was great fun yesterday. It was great fun on Monday. You can also watch it. Hop onto the stream, highlandradio.com. You can get a watch live link there, or indeed go to our socials. I want to mention a scam that is doing the rounds. And it's not just for residential customers. It's also business customers. It's a new scam. They'll put a letter in your letterbox at your door, right? Okay, so sorry, I just dropped paper here. Right, so they'll put in your letterbox at your door, it's a scam, throw it away. Right, sorry. So it's a, not sorry, it's a DHL piece of paper, and it looks all official, of course. It says, sorry we missed you, and it's got your date, it's got a waybill number, it's got delivered, ticked. It's got door not answered, ticked. It's got a QR code, which I imagine takes you somewhere very dodgy. ondemand.dhl.com/sg is a nonsense URL. It's a scam. But just in case you caught out that it's there's a physical element to it, that someone is shoving it through your door, it is still a scam. And you can see by the URL there, that is not a DHL URL. And then they ask you, at that point, they're going to stop asking you for your bank account details and what have you. If you received that, please be careful. If you did receive it and thought it was real, let us know as well. All good information to share with fellow listeners here to the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. And in studio with me now is Inspector Seamus McGonigal, head of the Traffic Corps in Donegal. Seamus, thank you for your time. We're also in the company of John Joe McGowan, Chief Ambulance Officer with HSE Ambulance Service West. And we are here with one simple purpose, isn't it? And that is to, as best we can, and you would hope it could be 100%, avoid death or serious injury on our roads, Seamus. It really is that simple.
It's certainly is that simple, Greg. And I must say, this has been a dreadful year on the roads in Donegal. Unfortunately, we've lost 18 people on the roads in Donegal this year. And again, we reiterate the appeal we make at all times of the year. I know we make it especially so at Christmas or any bank holiday weekends when there's added volume on the roads. But we just ask people, please slow down, drive at an appropriate speed. Don't be rushing to get there. Give yourself that extra few minutes and just slow down. Don't be drinking and, or using drugs and driving. Wear your seatbelt at all times and make sure that everybody in your vehicle is wearing a seatbelt. And then, of course, it's distractions. Don't let yourself be distracted from driving. Now, there's a slight change in that over the years where we used to speak solely of using mobile phones and not to use your mobile phone while driving. Well, now, I think with vehicles nowadays, there's so many devices within your car that you're actually, it's nearly worse than using your mobile phone, if I can say, because you're taking your eyes off the road completely to press the change channels or change the air conditioning or whatever. Now, there was a time when there was basically two knobs, for want of a better word, on your radio in a car. And in muscle memory, you could nearly watch the road and change them, and that was it. But with modern vehicles now, with touchscreens, etc.,
people are swiping between songs and all manner of different
And you're taking your eyes off the road for that second or two. And in that second or two, your vehicle can travel 50, 100 metres. Mm. And you have no control of the vehicle as such for that short time. So we're appealing to people, again, always slow down, wear your seatbelt, don't be drinking, driving, etc., but just be careful about distractions in your car.
And I think too, a lot of, our mood can affect our responsiveness and stuff. And, you know, it's a joyous time for people, except those that have been impacted by the tragedy on our roads this year. And sometimes you can feel euphoric. Maybe there's family coming home. Maybe you have a night planned out. You've got the music a little bit louder. I mean, no one wants to be a killjoy, but that can lead to distraction as well. Do you know what I mean? We can find ourselves in this euphoric state, and it's just the notion that that could turn into a tragedy is just, it's heartbreaking. And when you talk of the amount of people that have died on our roads, 167 across the entire 26 counties, you know, I mean, what we did is you sat down, we sort of exchanged your set for Christmas, house, you know, yeah. And we can do that. But for these families, and it's not just their mums and dads, granny and granddad's siblings, they're facing into the most horrendous of Christmas, the people that we've talked at, the people that have lost loved ones.
As you say, it's for always, it's forever. You know, these people are gone, and in so many instances, there was no need for these events to occur in the first place. Again, the changes we've made, the subtle distinction between, we used to speak of road traffic accidents. That's a phrase we don't use now as such, because the road traffic collisions, there's a reason these collisions happen. And it's usually down to driver error, people driving too fast, not wearing their seatbelts, etc. We can make a difference. By doing these simple things, we actually can make a difference. There shouldn't be so many people losing their lives and being seriously injured on the roads. Shouldn't be.
And
shouldn't
these changes happen. Save lives. They don't fundamentally have an impact on our lives other than saving them. Right, so keeping your eyes on the road, it's not an inconvenience. Do you know what I mean? You know, putting your music on before you pull off, have a playlist, it's not an inconvenience. You can still drive around, you can still be happy. It's just about not making little errors that we probably have all made over our driving careers. Sometimes you get away with them, sometimes you don't.
Just one thing, Seamus. Just one thing, you're only as good as the driver you're meeting as well.
Yeah.
You know, the oncoming driver. But again, if you're the slower you're driving, the more you're able to react to what that oncoming driver does. You know, and it's all about reaction time, and you give yourself every chance to have as much reaction time as possible in those circumstances.
John, you and your colleagues, John Joe, you and your colleagues, you know, I mean, I would say there's not one person that works in the ambulance service would dream of speeding or being distracted whilst driving, because you've seen, and you've seen firsthand, right after it's happened, the devastating impacts of a road traffic collision.
Yeah, Greg, I suppose myself and the colleagues have all, and Seamus and his colleagues have all witnessed firsthand the devastation that a road traffic accident can lead to. It's just monumental. If the scene of a road traffic accident where there's a fatality, it's impossible to describe to a person. But like we talked about statistics there earlier, in 167 year to date, the statistics show that year on year, ever since COVID, road deaths have increased over the last number of years. Now, they are nationally, they are on track to come down this year. So I suppose our message is, let's try and beat that trend of the increase in road deaths year on year. It was 135 in 2021, 155 in 2022, and 184 in 2023. And it's sitting at 167 this year. But they're just numbers. But behind all them numbers is people who's lost their lives and families associated with them people. And it leads to empty seats and tables and devastation over Christmas, especially. It's a harder time at Christmas, I suppose, in relation to death and especially road death. But it ultimately leads to empty seats at Christmas. And Seamus's message and my message is very clear. It's just about thinking a little more in relation to all things road safety at Christmas. It's the little things like preparing to... you prepare and put monumental preparation into going out and getting ready, but prepare to get home as well as going out. Don't just leave it to the last minute and say, oh, I'll get a lift. Or that's when the silly mistakes creep in and the little decisions that shouldn't be made creep in. When the drink's in, the sense is out, I suppose, and them little decisions, oh, I'll take the car home or I'll take a chance.
That, we'll all pile in the back.
Yeah.
How often have we seen a situation whereby, you know, it is that time of night, we're hearing of a shortage of taxis, and people just pile into a car, and whoever's driving, even if they're sober or whatever it might be, they're trying to drive a vehicle that is not designed to corner or to accept bumps or potholes or whatever it might be. And and we've had a terrible amount of multi-occupancy road traffic collisions. And I'm not saying that's the reason, by the way, because we're not attributing a blame. That's why Seamus quite rightly pointed out, we can't conclude what caused the collision. That's what the investigation is about. But we can speak generally, can't we? Yeah. I mean, you know, people will see, maybe on the work today, would have seen school buses pulling up. You know, the big coaches, most of them have a capacity around about 45. You know, just in terms of deaths on our roads today in this country, we're talking about over three of those.
Yeah.
Can you imagine three coach buses in a row, all people that are dead? And then if you put on their friends and families that are devastated by that, you would need another eight coaches behind them.
Yeah.
And all because of tragedy on the on our roads. Like, it is remarkable when you think about it in those terms.
Exactly, yeah. And like most fatalities, statistics show that most fatalities happen between 8 p.m. and 8 a.m. in the morning. And most fatalities, 7 out of 10 fatalities this year happened on rural roads. So it's not, it's the rural roads that you talk about with the potholes and the hedges overgrown and stuff like that there. It's happening on them roads. So it's a real thing for Donegal, because most of our roads is rural in the county. So, but it's really just trying to get that message. The other big thing, Greg, is people out walking. Christmas is a time when there's families home and you have your dinner, you go for a walk. The evenings is shorter, it's darker for longer periods of time. So when we're asking people, if they're out walking, to bring their head torches or their torches, and especially wear a high-vis jacket. The amount of people we have personally met over the last couple of days or weeks that's walking on a road and don't have a high-vis jacket on, it's lethal. It just really
and
is.
And especially walking home from a night out, it might be an unplanned walk. Will they have a high-vis? And who is to say that that overfilled car I talked of earlier doesn't end up trying to avoid that walker in the dark? You know, I'm throwing out scenarios, but this is what can lead to these types of tragedies. And in terms of enforcement, Seamus, you know, at the end of the day, I think we could have 1,000 Gardaí in Donegal, if the truth be told. A lot of this does, its enforcement is incredibly important. But we do also have to take individual responsibility here as well. And this message isn't going to get to everyone, but we hope it lands with some people. You know, we have to do the best to protect our own lives and those of our, those lives around us.
Well, of course, enforcement is primarily the responsibility of Gardaí Síochána. We also are so involved with the education process and avail of every opportunity like this morning. Again, we thank you, Greg, for coming into the media and emphasising the importance of good behaviour on the roads. And I can't but agree with you either. No number of guards on the roads will stop this completely. It is down to individual responsibility. It's down to a bit of people driving at appropriate speeds. And it's both yourself and John Joe's detail to plan in advance, especially this holiday period. Don't leave yourself where you're going to be piling into a car, as you say. And yes, of course, that's happened over the years. We're only all too well aware of it. So plan a little in advance. Have your taxi booked. Have somebody to come from home to collect you.
Well, that's it too. I mean, you know, I'm thinking that maybe some of the people that we're talking about may not be listening to this show. Maybe they're not even back from abroad yet. Who's to say? You know, maybe like me, for instance, I'll use me as an example. It's an easiest thing. If my son's going out, do I say, do you have a lift home? Do you, you know, absolutely, have you got a lift home? Or I'll pick you up. You know, what, will you be finished at 1:30? Or what? I don't know. You know, maybe if we have this conversation as people are heading out and sort of maybe see off at the gap that uncertainty or risk taking that may occur in the early hours of the morning if we've had a couple of drinks.
And I think I've made the point here before too, Greg. If as a parent you're in that situation and some of your teenage kids or whatever are going out, don't leave yourself in a position that you can't go and collect them because you've a glass of wine or two glasses of wine or whatever the case may be. You know, plan in advance. It's not just for drivers, but for all of us, as responsible adults. Plan in advance and make sure that people don't end up making those bad decisions.
In a period up until, a one-week period up until last Tuesday, I believe there were 10 detections in Donegal alone for drink and drug driving. And that's not really us in necessarily in peak enforcement and peak activity on the road. It's quite remarkable, Seamus, isn't it? You know, and it seems drug driving is being detected, at least in that week, more than drink driving. That's just not landing. That information's not landing. People are still prepared to take that risk.
It's a serious ongoing issue and right across the country. But yes, in Donegal, the same as everywhere else. Yes, drink driving is still a scourge out there. But the prevalence of drug driving now has actually increased something else in the last few years. The message, and to some extent, does not seem to be getting across. You know, you cannot have illegal drugs in your system and go out and drive a vehicle. You know, it's just not on. It's a non-runner. You're completely incapable of making proper decisions on the road when you've got drugs in your system and you're out driving.
And John Joe, I want to be sensitive, but I also want to paint a little bit of a reality as well. I mean, I can only imagine when you arrive at a scene, your ambulance arrives at a scene, you know, maybe 3 or 4 people in a car, it's been crashed, maybe rear seat passengers don't have seat belts on, maybe the passenger in the front was sitting with their legs up on the dashboard with no seatbelt.
Yeah.
Impact at maybe 1:20, 1:30. Everyone ends up in the same space in that vehicle.
Yeah.
Then word filters out maybe if they're locals that something has happened. You might get concerned neighbours or family that try and make their way to the scene.
Yeah.
You're holding them off. You're saying, I'm sorry, you can't come up here. You cannot see what's happening. We'll give you information as soon as we can. It's piddling rain.
Yeah.
It's freezing cold. The blue lights are flashing. I can't imagine.
No.
I don't know if that's what the scene is like, but I can't imagine that anyone would knowingly want to put themselves or anyone else around them in that situation. I'm feeling it now and it feels horrific.
Yeah. It's impossible to put into words the scene of a fatality at a road traffic accident. And that's one fatality, or we've had accidents in Donegal where we've 6-7 fatalities. It's just extremely difficult. As you say, when you speak there about what you're saying, roads, wet, raining, blue lights flashing, it brings back memories for us, and Seamus as well, no doubt, of accidents that we were at that was just like that, where we've had young family members, brothers and sisters coming up into the scenes, mums, dads coming into scene roaring and screaming because they know they can see the car from the distance. They know that it's their son or daughter's car and they just want to be up in that scene beside their loved one. And we have to say, no, we're very sorry. We can't let you in. And we know what's ahead for them people. We haven't told them yet because we haven't positive identities and stuff. And unfortunately, in some cases, it's impossible to make an identity at a road traffic accident. That it's just like if you crash a car at 120 kilometres an hour, it's pieces everywhere. It's carnage everywhere. It's devastation everywhere. It's just impossible to imagine what that scene's like. But to see then the family member coming up and asking and screaming and roaring would be shameless at times to see, let us in, let us see. We just want to be beside them and we have to say, no, we're sorry, we can't. It's immense. It's
one of the hardest jobs of policing, I imagine, is notifications. But Seamus, sorry, go ahead.
It's mayhem. Yeah, when you arrive at those scenes, it's mayhem. Now, it's albeit somewhat controlled mayhem, but it's the type of sight that you don't want any citizen to come across. You don't want anyone to see it. I've been at collisions where you literally don't know how many vehicles. You don't know how many vehicles are involved initially because there's metal spewing all over the place. And again, I've been at collisions as well, and so many of my colleagues and yourself, John Joe, have been at it, but you don't even know how many people are in the cars. You're literally searching for people, but I've been too graphic about it. And then, as John Joe, as you rightly say, especially with social media now, the word gets out very quickly. Families arrive at the scene. And again, it's the cruelest job for a guard or a paramedic to be trying to keep those people back from the bodies of
their... But you have to protect them.
We have to.
You have to actually protect them from the scene.
Yeah, but it's, you know, the screams and wails of a father or a mother at a scene, it has to be experienced to be believed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have some notion of that and it's horrendous. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whilst this conversation... I hope it doesn't come across as insensitive and it was me that started it. But I mean, I just feel it's time we start talking about the reality of the situation and those little conversations that we can have, those little plans that we can put in place can avoid this. Because the one thing we don't know who it's going to be.
Yeah.
We don't know. You know, there is a big wheel turning like you might see on one of those game shows and we don't know where the marker's going to stop. We simply don't, you know what I mean? Yeah. And that's. But what we can do is we can really work with our family and ourselves and prevent us being on that roulette wheel at all.
And like we've talked about statistics here this morning, but there's statistics still to come in December. There's numbers still to come. If you're a betting person, you can guarantee that there's somebody going to be killed on the roads in December, possibly in Donegal, but definitely nationally. And that could be somebody that's sitting listening to your radio show this morning. Touch wood, it could be some of us, it could be anybody. You don't know who that's going to be. It's you say the roulette wheel, where's it going to stop?
Seamus, you made a really good point earlier again, and I just want to sort of return to it briefly, and it's your reaction times. Because, you know, we might think we're very safe drivers and I'm very capable of turning the radio off, and maybe nothing has happened in your life to suggest that that's not a mistake to make, right? But say, for instance, someone coming in the opposite direction is driving fast or whatever. Now, I'm not condoning the earlier piece of driving, but it's just for the purpose of this scenario. And they pull out, you know, that 2 seconds that you would have to avoid them as a head-on collision. You travel so much of a distance in 2 seconds, it's crazy. And they're coming at you at an equal speed. You know, it's not actually, it's your alertness and your awareness to deal with that, what else is happening on the road, not just really, you know, that you might miss a bend or a crossroads or something.
I haven't actually got the figures with me. I'll make sure they're on the Garda Facebook page before the day is out. But as you say, in the space of 2 seconds, a vehicle driving at 60 kilometres an hour can travel, I forget the figure, 50, 60, 70 metres.
Yeah.
That's the difference in life and death. You know, if somebody else coming towards...
When you think how quickly your foot goes from the accelerator to the brake pedal... It's
because the car's still moving. The car's still moving.
Yeah.
You know, so every millisecond counts. Mm.
All right, OK.
Just, Greg, yes, the other piece in relation to... That's road traffic accidents and that for Christmas. But the other element of Christmas time especially is Santa brings brilliant presents. Santa brings bicycles and scooters and he always brings age-specific presents. But what he also always brings is utilities for them presence, the likes of helmets, knee pads, elbow pads. And it's extremely important for the children out there. Seamus has had words with them that, that all them utilities is coming, the helmets and all that's coming. So we're guaranteed of that part. But it's really important if you're getting a bike or that at Christmas to start wearing.
Yeah. And scooters too. Scooters. This is the first Christmas where... if you're over 16, scooters are effectively road legal, though mostly they seem to be used on footpaths. So again, a lot of different traffic, a lot of inexperienced people. Santa's back with Mrs. Claus having his mince pies, and we have to make sure that we stick the helmets in the
and how simple a small little accident, like just from a standing position to falling off a bicycle to hitting your head at the wrong place, can cause have monumental consequences and even tragedy, and we've seen that too over the years in relation to things like bikes. E-scooters are a huge thing now. We've seen a number of fatalities off e-scooters lately in the last number of years especially. So it's just for all them things. And if we start the habit, it's easier to start the habit than it's easy Christmas Day, I'm only going around the house. But every time a child gets on a bike or that there, if we can get the helmets on, and it's easier then. It becomes a habit then, and the habit is wearing it instead of not wearing
it. It's the norm, isn't it? Which you and all your colleagues, of course, a quiet Christmas. That's what we want, isn't it? Unfortunately, it may not be the case. I wake up every morning, the first thing I do is open the emails to see if there's a notification in from Angada Shia Khan. And on Sunday mornings, you breathe a sigh of relief, or Monday mornings, but unfortunately, it's not always the case. It's a Saturday, a Sunday, or a Monday morning, and not exclusively those days as well, because during the festive period, of course, every night's almost like a weekend, isn't it? But this is not to preach, it's not to scare, it's not to be insensitive, it's not to offend. It's our own mode. I think I can speak for all three of us, Inspector Seamus McGonagall, the only motivation of this is to ensure that we don't lose anyone unnecessarily this Christmas and New Year.
It's as simple as that, Greg. The guards have no interest in anything else other than saving lives on the roads. That is their primary focus at all times. And at times, people can be frustrated at guarded checkpoints being held back or for whatever reason. But we are there and we've got one aim and one aim alone. And that's to make the roads in Donegal as safe as we possibly can for the citizens of Donegal.
And again, just to talk to our own personal responsibility as well in that the guards have their job to do, don't get me wrong, but it's us individually and as families that really perhaps
it's only so much the guards or any emergency service can do. We can lay it out there, we can talk over and over, reiterate the points, but in the end of the day, it's personal responsibility.
All right, and it's a joyous time, isn't it? Okay, so we're all looking forward to, hopefully, except for those families that have been devastated, but you know, we are looking forward to spending time with our friends and families and people coming home, and it's not to not do that. It's just these little changes that we can tweak to ensure that it is truly a fun time, and we don't have the tragedy we talked of. Inspector Seamus McGonagall, head of the Traffic Corps in Donegal, I really appreciate you sparing your time this morning to try and drive home this message. John Joe McGowan with the Chief Ambulance. He's the Chief Ambulance Officer, in fact, with the HSE Ambulance Service West. Unless there's anything that just has come to mind that you want to mention, but again, it's about having a happy, fun, peaceful Christmas as much as you can. But let's
make Christmas a time of joy and not tragedy. I think it's a key message, Greg, this morning.
Again, I just take the opportunity to thank yourself, Greg and Caroline here at Highland Radio, for all the support you've given us through the year, for giving us the airtime to make our appeals. It's a repetitive message, I know, but we do appreciate it. Like, just wish you and all your listeners a happy Christmas and a happy New Year. And if I may, I know we're trying to finish on a high note, and rightly so, I appreciate that. But just, I think it's so important that we remember those who we lost during the year and the families. And if I may take the liberty, actually, just to name those people and just have them in our thoughts, and that everybody, all your listeners, can think about those poor deceased people and their families. Leila Hussain, Kieran McCart, Veronica Barrett, Patrick McMenamin, Jimmy McKenna, Patrick McGettigan, Una McGettigan, Owen Dawson, Cian Dawson, Elizabeth Cave, Patricia McBurty, Donna McDermott, Harold Tugwell, Michael Toland, Gordon Galbraith, Ryan Glenn, Samuel Hunter and Tiernan Doherty.
Those are people lost on the roads in our county this year. May they rest in peace, and we hope that the families get all the support and strength that they need to get through what is obviously going to be an incredibly difficult time for them. Inspector Seamus McGonagall, John McGowan, both of you, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, Greg.
And thank you again to Seamus and John Joe for coming in. And I know such is the way road traffic collisions are and how it impacts people, and the fact that it's so close to home and the fact that some are going to be affected by that directly. I'm incredibly conscious that last segment is going to be a very hard listen, but we will never know if it prevents a road traffic collision or it prevents a family losing a loved one. We hope it will. And a couple of callers are suggesting that we should isolate that clip and put it up as a separate piece. We will, of course, do that. And maybe it's something you could ask people around you to listen to, because they paint a picture of particularly attending the scene of a road traffic collision and what happens at that maybe might be the catalyst for someone. Just a slight tweak to the driving behaviour. It's not preachy. You can be happy and have a great Christmas as I try and iterate, but it's just to try and make sure that we all get through it, right? A caller says, and it's on the train of what I was just saying, I think that this segment of road safety should be posted as its own clip, which it will be, and thank you for the suggestion. When the two men were talking about being at the scene of a road traffic collision, it even scared me, and I've been driving for 35 years. I think that we should share it to each young people, to all young people, the dangers of the road, and to be careful. I'll be making my sons listen anyway. Indeed, and it's a message that me, and I'm much older than your sons, I imagine, but it's landed with me as well, and I'm going to redouble my driving efforts as well. Councillor Michael McClafferty commented, there was recently a car collision in England. The driver was uninjured and found to be under the influence of drugs and alcohol. His two friends were killed. This was not the driver's first offence. This is what needs to change. Anyone caught driving with drink or drugs should face immediate life bans from driving. I don't know about that. I don't know enough about it. I think people, we need to have a law system where people are rehabilitated, or you try and rehabilitate them. I don't know what the solution to that is. Is there a law against people who share footage of road traffic collisions, or is it just a moral issue? I'll check that out. I think it might be the latter rather than the former, to be honest with you, but I'll double check it for you. Good morning, Greg. I've just pulled in to send this message. I was driving into Ardra this morning and met a young woman driving and looking down at her phone, not looking at the road at all, me driving a school bus. These people need to cop on. Thank you for highlighting these issues. Happy Christmas to you and all the team. And thank you as well for texting. And we need you bus drivers as well. You, sir, for the most part, brilliant, safe drivers, and get us about and get our children in and out from school safely. So hopefully you get some time off to spend with your family and you have a very happy Christmas and New Year. I do 30,000 miles a year. I see people going too slow on the road. I'm not telling people to speed, but you need to let people pass. They've no regard for the half a mile of traffic behind them. I don't know. After that last piece, to be honest, I get where you're coming from, but, you know, arrive alive. Be there late rather than, you know, be the late, Greg. I don't know. I get where you're coming from, and it can be frustrating, and it is a danger as well. So I do take your point. I'm not dismissing it for a second. E-scooters, mountaintop yesterday evening, 5:30 p.m. Man on a scooter doing 35 kilometres per hour with just a scarf and no helmet on the main road. Doesn't know how that is allowed by the government. Basically just a skateboard with handles on. Well, I'm not contradicting you, but at least a skateboard has four wheels. A scooter has two. Shouldn't be doing 35 kilometres per hour. I believe the max limit is 25, so that is not allowed. Good morning, Highland. Please mention that there is a coffee morning at the Red Door in Farn in aid of Nazareth House Residents Comfort Fund. Tea poured from 10 a.m. Thanks from Kathleen. Okay. Morning, Greg. Of course, the camcaller wanted to stay on. Another pensionable job for him with an annual salary of just 255 grand a year for sitting on his bum all day. This country's rotten to the core, believes a listener. Another one here. The Gardaí can talk the talk, but the reality is that it's only talk. There'll be very few checkpoints, and we know that. I haven't been stopped at a Gardaí checkpoint in over 20 years, and I have been driving all over Ireland. I know I won't be stopped over the Christmas period either. But see, that's my point. Like, you know, I don't want to live in a police state or a nanny state where there's new laws for everything. There's laws for speaking. There's laws for how you behave. There's laws for everything else. You know, I mean, we can't have it both ways. We don't want a state that overreaches into our lives, but at the same time, you know, doesn't in certain areas. I just really think it's time we started talking about our own responsibility, my responsibility, you know, Ashley's responsibilities, Lee's responsibility, Aaron's responsibilities on the roads, and not necessarily Seamus's responsibility to nick them. Do you get where I'm coming from? I'm not being preachy, but and I'm not sort of giving the Gardaí a pass. It's just a point I think worth making, or at least us all having a chat about it anyway. Right, let us take a break. We have a lovely hour coming. Stay where you are. In the first hour of the show, we were chatting to Seamus and John Joe, and it was a view to trying to get home the road safety message about our actions, but also the actions of others, and to be alert that we can take evasive action or whatever, all the different scenarios that we can try and avoid to try as best we can to avoid road traffic collisions. And sometimes they are completely unavoidable, and we have to also accept that. But it's kind of an interesting situation because Michelle McKenna joins me on the phone, Michelle. And as we were having that conversation, and as I was talking sort of about how I was conscious that, you know, this conversation could be hurtful to some who've suffered a great loss. You were in my thoughts. I'm not going to lie to you. And then when Caroline says you were coming on the show, it was peculiar in a way. If that makes sense, Michelle, I'm rambling. But as I say, I was thinking on you, and now here we are chatting.
Yeah. Good morning, Greg. Suppose I just wanted to send on my support, Greg, to you. I thought it was very, I'm a wee bit emotional, I'm sorry, but
it's okay, Michelle,
I'll try
take
my best
time,
to get through.
There's nothing wrong with emotions, it's
yeah,
okay.
I just, you know, every other year, Greg, I listen to your show and listen to other shows and TV ads, and even this morning I seen a TV ad, and just, you know, you sit there and you're looking at it and you're listening to it and you're listening to these statistics and you're listening to numbers, and then today, you know, it was so touching when you named out every single person in Donegal that had been killed on our roads, and then to listen to my own son's name being mentioned. And it brought it to me that, you know, in years gone by, you know, you don't really pay much heed unless you know the family or unless you know that person. And like, I'd be well known, suppose, in Donegal, but and people know exactly what I'm going through and my family. But it's just that, you know, if people would, you know, just slow down. Like, even after your programme this morning, I was coming down from Letterkenny to Buncrana, and I was coming around a corner, and this car was just on the wrong side of the road, and only I swerved in, and I thought, oh my God, like, your heart starts beating. You know, they mustn't have the radio on, they're not listening. Like, you know, I'd be more aware now myself. I'm so afraid of something happening on the road all the time now. But it's just to get this, to change the statistic into a person, and what you've done this morning, and I only rang in just to say thank you so much. It was emotional, it was tough, you know, exactly. I could feel it, you know, I hear it in your voice that, you know, what the families are going through, and it's devastation, Greg, there's no doubt about that. I just dread, you just, every day, like, I spend most of my time with my son's grave, and I know people say he's not there, but to me, he's there, that's where his body is.
Yeah, he's there.
And I know I've got great faith in my prayer. I've gone back to prayer a lot. And I just know he's with me. And I just know that, you know, he'd be wild to put his arm around me. And he loved his mummy and he loved his daddy. Like, you know, and I was saying to Caroline there, like, you know, even to listen to his poor daddy, like, he was there quite quickly. And, you know, when he tells the story to me, like, he doesn't say it to the kids, like, you know, but he would say to me, like, you know, when I held him, and he was still warm. I knew the last time I'd feel him warm. And, you know, when you, me and him sit, cry about it, and then you realise then, you know, there's nothing we can do. We can't bring him back. And every other year, and like James would have been the fire chief in Buncrana here. He's been to numerous accidents, all those serious accidents over the years. So he knew he was that person dealing with the families. And then all of a sudden, he is, it's his son. it's my son, you know, and you think it's never going to happen to you, Greg, and then all of a sudden you get that phone call, you get that knock at the door, you get that that message, and you say no, no, and the wailing and the crying. That's all I remember, Greg. I don't remember the last 6 months. I am going through. We're all functioning every day. I'm so lucky. I've got two grandchildren who are Kate 10 months and Aaron 17 months. And I have them to keep me going and keep the family going. And we try and go out and do our... I can't do a full day's work. I just go and do what I can because my brain doesn't let me function properly. But it's just that, oh, when you're talking about the devastation, Greg, it is just unless you've been there and what I found out, being out of the grave, the amount of families that are in the same situation. And you know what, Greg, it's growing and growing and growing every day you hear it, and every, will it be Donegal or National? And it's like a knife going into your heart again and stirring another. But because I know what that family's going through, I know what that parents are, I know what that mommy's doing, I know, I can hear her cries. I feel I am that person again. So, and every family's the same, Greg. I talk to loads of people that have children was killed. And, you know, I'm not belittling the people either that have children die of natural causes, because they're as devastated as we are. You know, a loss of a child is a loss of a child. And I was talking to my daughter this morning, like, you know, when I was saying that, you know, the loss of a brother, the loss of a sister, but there's just something, the grief of a loss of a child, there's different types of grief. And everybody deals with it in their own way. And I will come across as a very strong person, and I'm out and I'm involved in the Gaelic and doing my bits. And people say to me, you can see it in my eyes. I said, that's right. You're crying for 6 months, you look the same. I'm never going to be the same, Greg. I'm never going to be the lady I was before this. I can't be. But I have to learn to move on to a new normal and be there for my other three children and my two grandchildren and for my mum. You're still alive and well. And it's just, I just want to thank you, Greg. That's all I rang in for, was to thank you, to show the support, that it wasn't just another program with a statistic or a number. He wasn't number 9 or number 10 in Donegal. He was Jimmy McKenna. And I just thank you so much for that. And just please, please let people, young people especially, it's not just young, you know, it's all ages. We're looking at people, you know, a lot older as well, who go out to have a drink. They think it's okay. They're getting into their cars, even speeding. It's not okay, because I was that person who listened to your show every year. And now, and Jimmy's daddy would have been done the road safety show for years with the Donegal County Council. And it's just surreal to think, now he's that parent. Now I'm that parent. Oh, I'm probably
what you're saying is so important. It can be any of us at any time, and you know the difference between the different types of loss that you talk of. You talk about people who very sadly lose children to illness. You know what they would give to have an opportunity to try and avoid it. And with road traffic collisions, we have opportunities to try and avoid it. Some things, of course, are always could be unavoidable. Yeah. But we don't drink, and we don't take drugs, and we don't drive. We don't speed. We don't allow ourselves to be distracted. We watch out for what's coming around the corner. You know, we slow down. We take our time. And we don't want to put any mother like you, Michelle, clearly a wonderful, loving mother. We don't want to put another mother through this. And you know, I want you to give James a big hug for us as well too, please, because his experience is unimaginable, and what you're going through is unimaginable, but James' memories are just, if you haven't been through it, we can't get our head around what it must be like, Michelle. And you and James are an amazing people, to have any strength left at all, and you're wonderful, and Jimmy was wonderful, and I wish he was with you. And wherever you get comfort, wherever you feel Jimmy's around you, that's the right place for you to be, because it's your loss and it's personal to you, and you know best yourself. You're the mum.
Yeah, that's true. And it's just, you know, it's just, Greg, like, you never think it's going to happen. And, you know, I own a creche and I've loads of kids in it, and I look at them all and I think, my wee Jimmy was that age. God, you know, you're thinking all these things, like, you know, you're thinking, and you hear this and you hear that, and I dreaded it. You always think, God, I hope that would never happen to me. And then you think, no, it'll not happen to me. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, it's surreal, Greg. You don't really, you know, you don't understand. You just think it's just, I don't know what kind of way we're designed, but our brains are designed to protect us mm-hmm. from the total grief, because there's days you kind of function half normal, and then all of a sudden you're...
It comes in waves, doesn't it? It's waves, so,
yeah,
you know, it's like the sea's yeah. low, and next thing you know, this wave comes and it's overwhelming, but it calms yeah. again. Michelle, would it be hurtful for yeah. you for you to tell us a little bit about Jimmy so we can remember him for you? I don't want to upset you in any way, shape or form, but I would love to know a bit about him if it wouldn't be too tough for you.
No, you're okay. Yeah, Jimmy was a character, like, you know, and anybody, I think everybody knew Jimmy. Jimmy was just a character. He was just full of fun, devilment, just very lovable child and very open. He would have no problem telling his mommy how much he loved her. And I think everybody who knew me would know that, I don't know what it was, Greg, about him, but he was a child that I had four, and I just kind of felt that, you know, he needed a little bit of guidance through life. Like, you know, I used to say to people, he was like a wee weak duckling, you know, and he's had a wee wounded wing, and he used to need support now and again, like, you know. And suppose out of that, and he worked for me as well in the business, like, you know, and he would, me in Hampshire, I'd have been given out to him, but this and that, and he'd be, and then he would never, ever hold on against you. And he was very much like, you know, it's strange, you know, Greg, you know, as nearly as if he knew, like, you know, 7 years ago he was involved in a very serious car accident. He was the only one wearing a seatbelt, like, you know, and his two friends were a horrific accident as well, like, you know, and I felt so lucky that my child survived, like, and then all of a sudden 7 years later, and since that he would have had dealt very much, he would have been turmoil, like, about that, losing his two friends. And he did go to counselling, and he would try to get over that. And then, you know, this is the sad part about it, you know, I always had a feeling something was going to happen. But I didn't know it was because of the accident. I was overprotective of him or whatever. But and then come February, he said to me, Mom, he says, would you take me to New York? And I says, New York? I says, what are you going to go to New York for? I guess I've been everywhere else, you know, and I just like to go to New York. And I says, right, okay. He says, now, November, December time, be all right. And Greg, for some whatever reason, I said, we'll go Saturday. This was a Monday morning.
What?
And I says, we'll go Saturday. Wow. And I booked everything. And he said to me, and sure, Greg, I have an American passport, and because I was born in America. And I said to him, oh God, my passport's out of date. So Thursday morning, I went to Dublin to get an emergency passport, got the passport. He was saying, oh, we'll not get now. I told you not to book it so quick and all this. But anyway, we managed to get to New York. I booked 4 days. He wanted to see, very interested in the 9/11. And my dad's buried in New Jersey. And very interested in going to see my dad's grave. And he was saying, am I the only grandchild to have seen this grave? Yeah, very interesting. And then he'd never been seen in 3 days. And says, Mum, he was always, if he was finished, he wanted to get home early. And that had happened a lot. He would want home a day early, back home. Spent 3 great days with him in New York, great memories. And then when he came home, he says, Mum, he talked about, he was born on the 22nd of August, which is the Feast of the Assumption of Our Lady. And for some strange reason, he wanted to get a tattoo of Our Lady tattooed in his arm.
Unbelievable.
And I told him, don't be so silly, go and get tattooed your arm, as destroying your body. And he says, no, he says, well, he didn't tell me what a tattoo was, he just said tattoo. And he came back and it was a tattoo of Our Lady.
Mm.
And I couldn't scold him then because he had this lovely picture of Our Lady in his arm. And then, and on the bottom of it, Greg, he had two robins, because when his two friends passed, these two robins always sat at the front door. So we got two robins. And he was very much, I said to him, you know, and he got a miraculous medal and wore it around his neck. And I said to him, what are you away to religion for?
Yeah.
I says, what's wrong with you? You're all away with it. And he says, just to keep me safe, Mama, to protect me. If I was feeling something was going to happen to me.
My word.
And then in June, then it happened.
So there was certainly something spiritual going on there, Michelle, whatever way. I'm not sure if that gives you comfort or otherwise, and maybe you haven't fully processed it. But there's definitely a... He was touched by something, whether it was his friends or his granddad or something. There's definitely something spiritual touched him.
Yeah.
Oh, it's an awful lot to get through the process.
For now, I feel more sorry for my two nieces because he doted on them. Oh. And the little one was only 11 weeks when he was killed, he doted on them. But you know what? Every day at the grave, I listen to his voice notes. He sent me beautiful voice notes telling me how much he loved me. Oh. And he was such a daddy's boy and a mammy's boy. And he was just a character. And all his friends miss him deeply. Mm. And he was just the fun of the party, Greg. He was just so happy. He was never in bad humour, and he loved life, and he toured the world. Probably, his friend said to me the other day, should we know you had him spoiled? Should we know you couldn't afford all that? Should we know you had him spoiled, you know, and all this? But he had a great 25 years, and I was so lucky to have him as my son for 25 years, but I just know that he was needed up there for
some reason.
Else.
There was a plan for him.
I just know now he'll... Yeah, there was a plan, and he knew that, and I kind of knew that too, you know, but I just didn't want to admit it. And
well, you can draw comfort from that, hopefully, Michelle, that if there was a plan for him, that means that he is, you can still feel him, he is still with you, because you have to take his lead on that, and his connection with his granddad, the medal, the tattoo, the robins, it all has to mean something, Michelle. And thank you so much for trying us to get us all to change our behaviours a little bit. And thanks particularly for letting us hear a bit about Jimmy, because I was sad and I had a smile on my face throughout the whole conversation as you were describing him. He's just a wonderful lad. Thanks, Michelle. Yeah. Best wishes and love to you and
so
James
much,
and all the family, okay?
Yeah, and Greg, you're doing great work, and I just said that to Carly, you are just so great at your job, and keep it up, and you're always, always spot on when you say things. You're just great. Thank
Michelle,
you so much,
you're too
Greg.
Kind. God bless you. Take care, Michelle.